Have you ever dreamed of being able to make more money, live a better life, and have the financial freedom that's rightfully yours? Well, now is your chance. With an engaging perspective and tone, your host Ryan Dement will guide you through your journey to financial freedom one step at a time. Let's get to it. Here is your host, Ryan Dement.
Hey guys, Ryan Dement from Chasing Financial Freedom Podcast. I hope you guys are having a great day. Today on the podcast, we have Bronson Hill. He is a multifamily investor. He also helps busy professionals earn that passive income that they're looking for. We're going to talk about multifamily investing, and he's got a few other things he's doing. Bronson, welcome to the show.
Hey, Ryan, really excited to be here, man. It's great talking about finance, and it's always awesome to learn about how we can get better at passive investing and make our money work for us. So super excited to talk.
Cool. Before we get into everything, can you give the listeners a little bit about yourself and your background, and then we'll get into your journey?
Sure. I was a busy professional. I was doing medical device sales, which basically means I was wearing scrubs going into surgery and showing heart surgeons how to use their devices. It was a great job. I enjoyed it. It was very interesting. One challenge about it that I didn't like is that I didn't have control over my time. I wanted to try to develop passive income. And I had some single family houses and I thought, oh, this is passive income, but I was getting calls every week and I really wasn't getting a lot of cash flow. And so the idea, there's this quote by Warren Buffett, and he says, unless you learn how to make money while you sleep, you'll work until you die. And I spent a lot of time thinking about that and just what does that actually mean to really have passive income to where you don't actually have to work for it. Your money actually works for you. And through someone, I learned about multifamily syndication, which is just a fancy way of saying raising money from other people and pulling it together and doing big multifamily deals, typically 100 units or more. And I learned about how to do it, started the local meetup in Southern California. And 4 years later, I quit my great corporate job. And now I have about $200 million in multifamily assets. We help people to leave their jobs or start getting passive cash flow through real estate and other types of investments.
That's cool. I'm in the real estate space, but I'm not in multifamily. We're in single family. We develop affordable homes, sustainable workforce, however you want to call it. But I always like to talk about real estate in general. You had single family residence. What really popped? And you wanted more time. You wanted to have freedom. What got you to the next level or started you to look at multifamily?
Yeah. So I think I didn't really catch it right away. I just thought, hey, my goal, I had 4 or 5 and I wasn't really cash flowing as much as I thought. I was buying some low cost houses in Cleveland and they penciled great on paper. And then when it actually came down to it, there were actually much more. It wasn't like a nice part of Cleveland. So there were a lot more expenses than I thought. And it just didn't really turn out the way that I wanted. And so I think a lot of transformation happens when we meet people. We meet someone who's done what it is you're looking to do. Maybe you didn't even know there was something out there. That's why I go to a lot of events a year. I probably go to 20 live conferences a year or more. I go to a lot of conferences and I meet interesting people, but met someone who was doing multifamily syndication. And they just said, this is way easier. Why don't you look at doing this? And so then they've been doing it for 25 years. And they just said, read this book, listen to this podcast, go to this conference, go to this training. And just did everything they said. And then before I went to an event that really convinced me that was like, okay, I could do this. A lot of times we say, can't do this. It's really the question is, how can I do this? And a lot of things are actually not as hard as they seem on the surface. It's just meeting the right people and actually trying. And it wasn't as hard as I thought. It took a little longer than I think I left my job. It was a total of about 3 years after I started, but I was really happy about that. I had a great job. I wasn't able to necessarily replace my income right away because I was making a lot of money, but I was able to replace my living expenses. And I think that's kind of the first level of financial freedom when you actually can replace your living expenses. So that's the challenge with single family houses. If you buy a bunch of houses right now, especially, how many houses do you have to become after you pay all your expenses, you're getting enough cash flow to live on? And I found today it's hard to find, no matter how much the house costs, to get more than $100, $200 a month in cash flow, particularly if you have a manager and it doesn't become a job for you. Because if I had 30 or 40 houses and I wanted to self-manage or something, that's just another job. I didn't want another job. I wanted the ability to 10x my income or my net worth without having to take up more of my time. So that's what really gets me excited about passive investing, where people can actually have their time back. And that's really what we do at Bronson, because we try to help people to do that.
So you're getting yourself into learning and so forth. What would your biggest hurdle be during that time when you're reading books, podcast, you're listening to podcasts, going to live events? What slowed you down? What held you back?
I think initially there's just a lot. You don't know what you don't know, right? When you're starting out doing something, you're like, I want to get there. I don't know how to do it. And a lot of people have this experience. There's really two ways to get started. Now, if you have money, you can invest passively with an operator in their deals, which is great. I didn't really have a lot, even though I was making a lot of money, I didn't really have a lot of money to invest. So I really tried to leverage my time. And I just was reading a lot. I tried to keep learning and how can I add value? What can I do? And then it took about, say about 6 months until, or close to 6 months until I found my first investor in a deal. And then it took about another 6 months after that before I really found a partner and we really scaled up. So again, I'd raised 100,000 and it was hard to kind of go up from there and find the right partners. And so then I found a guy who was just doing some big things in the real estate space. And I said, hey, how's it going in this area of raising money? And he had been thinking about wanting to expand. And so we set up a partnership, and over those next 18 months together, we raised about 15 million. So I went from basically not raising any money or 100K to raising 15 million. And it really came through really trying to find a way to add value. There's this paraphrase by a guy named Jim Rohn, who was a motivational speaker. And he said, make yourself valuable to valuable people. So what that means is find people that are doing things that you admire, things that are really adding a lot of value in the space, and just really try to think about how can I really help this person to grow, or how can I bring value? Because a lot of people that are really successful, they're super busy and they're dealing with problems in their business all the time. Most people will come to them and say, hey, I want you to mentor me, or hey, I want this from you, or I want that from you. But when you can come to somebody who's very successful, and if somebody comes to you, Ryan, and says, hey, how can I help you in this specific area of your business that you're already thinking about? That's a really impressive thing. Somebody's actually thinking about that in your business. And then it could potentially lead to some sort of partnership where you could work together. And that's how people get paid. People get paid by adding value and finding a way to grow the value in a business.
I love that. Adding value is huge, because I would probably say almost on a daily basis, someone reaches out through the podcast or through social media and they're like, oh, I want to do this and this. And I'm like, okay, where are you at in that process? And they don't think the process through, but they just want you, like you said, to mentor them or hold them accountable or whatever. And I'm like, okay, I can help you, but there's got to be a give and take. And it doesn't seem like that there's there. But back to what you said, when you first raised your first 100,000, the listeners here are self entrepreneurs. They're self-employed, small business owners, people that are working their 9-to-5 like you did and are looking to climb that corporate cubicle and get out and get their side hustle going. What were some of the obstacles that you had for raising your first 100,000, and some tips that you could share with the listeners to help them get more comfortable with raising
capital? So there's a lot of obstacles that come up when there's something you've never done. There's this saying that, you know, when you have your comfort zone, right? So your comfort zone is this area where you live, you do things. When it comes to something like, I've never raised money, that sounds really scary, or something that's outside your comfort zone, or what would happen in this scenario, or what if I fail, or what happens if I try this and it doesn't work? So there's this kind of comfort zone area. And then way outside of here, kind of the larger, you have the panic zone, right? So you don't want to go from like straight comfort zone to the panic zone. But there are things that get you from the comfort zone to be able to take some steps out into the area it's not comfortable, right? And that's called the growth zone. So as you do something, and then once you've been there a little while and you do something, you achieve something, you're like, oh, this actually, I can do this. And then your comfort zone grows. The goal is to try to grow your comfort zone. So it's not to go from, hey, I've only done this, to I'm going to go all the way out here. And it's just, that's super panicky. So people wonder, how do you have these progressive growth in your life? There's a lot of challenges just in the mindset that come into, what if I raise money? That sounds scary. What are the legal issues with that? Or what if I lose people's money? Or I only want to invest with friends and family, or I don't want to invest with friends and family, or I don't want to have them invest in my deals, because what happens in these scenarios? But a lot of this stuff can be really, it can be limiting. Or if you just talk with somebody who's done it, who's a step or two ahead, it can be really helpful, because it allows doors to open, and almost everybody's had that same thought. The thing is, if you get around people that are a step or two ahead of you in any area of life, whether it's fitness, whether it's, you know, a job or travel or investing, you can learn so much. And then it takes some of the scary out of it. And then also, if you start asking those questions, it develops mentors that when that issue or an issue comes up, you can go talk to people and say, hey, I'm having this issue here. So this person that really introduced multifamily to me had been doing it for years, and had a close enough relationship with them where I really had a mentor built in, right? I could call up and say, hey, Wes, help me in this area. What can I do here? Or, hey, what do you think about this? And so it became like really helpful to have somebody who had done it. Now, when I started, this is my journey. This is not how everybody's journey is different, but I think it's just, if you just take action, you take enough action, you make a decision that, hey, I'm going to go this direction, or I'll leave my job in 3 years or whatever, and you take the actions, eventually you'll get there. It'll look different, but you'll get there. So what I did is I started a meetup. I approached somebody who was very successful. And I'd been going to a general real estate meetup, and I said, hey, how about we run this meetup? We do another one. And so two instead of one a month, two a month. and we'll do it. I'll do all the work and you just show up and we'll do it just on multifamily. They said, hey, it sounds like a great idea. So I just did all the work. And then at the first meetup, we had 60 people there because we promoted it a lot. And the guy comes up to me out of the blue and was like, hey, I'd invest in one of your deals. And I'm thinking like, are you talking to me? Like, is that? And so he's like, yeah. So yeah, he said, so I said, okay, let's grab some coffee. So we got some coffee. And I basically said, I showed him a sample deal that just said, this is what a deal would look like. And he said, yeah, I'd invest like $100K in something like that. So I said, okay. So then I introduced him to another guy I met at that first meetup who had a deal and was looking for money. And then again, I just brought those two together, the deal and the money. And now here I have some experience as a general partner. So again, if you can just try to find a way to add value and help people, a lot of people have, I call it, they have a money problem, right? It's not, they don't have money, they have money and they don't know what to do with it. The stock market feels scary. Oh my gosh, what am I going to do? And things like multifamily investing or other sorts of alternative assets can provide an awesome way to help people. So when you approach people, it's not like, hey, would you please, are you begging? Or, hey, would you help me out by investing in my deal? It's like, no, people really have what you need. And just getting that in your mindset and also realizing that, you know, not everybody's going to invest with you right away. And I remember sending 62 friends and family I had in-person or phone call meetings with, and I had zero actually invest. But it was that guy I met at the meetup who saw me in that place of leading something in the space that actually invested it. Now, fast forward, a lot of those 62, or I'd say maybe, you know, a number of those 62 people, friends and family have invested because I knew it would help them, just take time for them to see, hey, is this something that, you know, a lot of people don't know that you're doing real estate? So you have to tell that story in a way that's very creative. So there are some, definitely some challenges there, covered a lot there. But I think if you just take actions, get around people that are at the next level, will really help you to get there.
It's also going back to that initial conversation. It's sad, but it's true because I've struggled with it. Raising capital was probably the biggest things that I struggled with. And the investor on the other side, whether it be over the phone or in person, Zoom, whatever, can sense when you're desperate. You have to position yourself as it's they're going to lose out if they don't come on the journey with you. And once you get that mindset right, it works, but it takes time and practice. I think I lost on 15 to 20 deals because I never got that until I found the right mentor like you did. Took me a little bit longer to get to the mentor game, and I can always talk about that. But once I had the right mentor in my corner that had raised capital that could help me with those pitches, could understand, or I could understand where he was coming from, it made a lot more sense. And then the role playing is bad. As stupid as it sounds, most people think role playing doesn't work. It works. It works very well. And if you get comfortable in your own skin and project how you feel about your investment opportunity to these individuals, or maybe it's a group of investors, they'll buy in just exactly like what you did at your meetup. They saw you in a position of power. They saw you in a position of knowledge, and he comes up and boom, you get to be able to put the deal together and make it happen.
Yeah, absolutely. No, it's, I think what you shared is really worth emphasizing. I call it a scarcity mindset, right? If you show up, and I touched on it a little bit too, but if I show up, hey, would you invest in my deal? And it's this, I need this. It's the same thing when you go to a used car lot or something, and you say, hey, can I, like, and everybody pounces on the person when they come in there. That's how it feels, right? Versus if you, a position of strength is, hey, you talk to an investor, hey, we've got our deals, partners, our deals fill pretty quick. This is generally what we do. This is how the process works. If you want to join, here's what it is. And I don't chase people. No, we've raised $13.5 million in the last 12 months. I don't chase people for it. I just basically add on my list. This is how the process works. I try to, a lot of people have never done this before. They've never invested with you. If they have invested before, they've never invested with you. So you just think about the, what do you want the experience to be like? When you go to Starbucks or you go to your favorite restaurant, you know what you're going to get. You know they're going to make your drink a certain way. The attitude of the staff is going to be a certain way. The place is going to be clean. It's going to have a certain music. Same at your restaurant, that you know that experience. So the big thing is when people talk with you, you just need to try to set the table, right? You need to say, okay, this is generally how it works. Even if it's your first deal, you never had a conversation with an investor. It takes this long. This is how it works. This is when you get cash flow. These are things you can expect. This is the communication. These are our values. And then somebody walks away and says, huh, at least I feel like I'm pretty good understanding who this person is. If they, and I just feel like if most people you talk to are not going to invest. I've talked over to about 1,300 investors one-on-one, and it's about a 17% rate of those that actually invest. So it's less than 1 out of 6 that will actually invest with you. So it's okay. I realize it's going to take time to figure out how to talk with investors. Role-playing works. And then even too, when you talk with your first investor, you might be nervous, but by number 50, you'll be a little more comfortable. I think that's something just to remember.
It's practice, but you made me think of something. One of my first investors I spoke to, I thought I bombed it in having that conversation with him, but it took him, he didn't invest right away. took him almost 7 months. And then he came back out of nowhere. I put him in our email marketing. He kept on getting our weekly emails, letting them know what we were doing, blah, blah, blah. Never heard from him, never responded to any of my emails. And all of a sudden out of nowhere and goes, man, I've been listening to your podcast. I've been watching your emails. I see what you guys are doing. I'm ready. Okay, cool. And sometimes there's investors like that are going to do that. You just have to be able to be open and honest with yourself. If it doesn't happen, then you just got to keep on going. Like you said, 1 in 6, you got to play the numbers. And my mentor talked to me about something that still sticks in my head. Most people that are out pitching, whether it be for money, business, whatever, typically give up on the 3rd or 4th ask. You need to get to that 6th, 7th, and 8th ask. That's where you start making your money. And that's where you start getting things going. But like you said, you've spoken to 1,300 people. You've got people that are going to come back each time because now they've got history. But to get there, you've got to be out there and putting yourself out there consistently day in and day out.
Yeah, absolutely. It's something too. This is an issue that I coach people now. I'm at the group called Kingdom REI. So we're a faith-based group of entrepreneurs mm-hmm. that help people do real estate, either raise money or find deals. And a lot of times somebody's like, they're coming from being a lawyer or being a salesperson or being a teacher or having their own business. A lot of times it's all about telling a different story. And that's why you talked about your content, your weekly content. It's just when you start telling a different story, it's almost like if I were to go to my car mechanic and I was trying to get my car fixed and on there for years and they start pitching me on a real estate deal, right? I'd be like, this just doesn't really fit. Dude, fix my car. What's going on? Like you're the car guy. But if we'd had conversations about real estate over the years or if they'd sent emails or had some sort of way, like that would start to change. Oh, this person is, they're an entrepreneur, they're doing real estate, whatever. And it changes the way people see you. So I think for anybody who's looking to get more into real estate, if you can start sending out weekly emails or monthly emails or just post on social media, hey, this is what I'm doing, it changes the way people perceive you. We always tell people that step number one is start an email list and then just start giving value to them. Why do you like multifamily? Why are you convinced that it's the best thing? Why do you love real estate even when inflation is high? What are those reasons? You start sharing those things. And people will read them. Like not everybody will read them, but especially if they're good. I'm always amazed. I go to a conference, oh, I'm reading all your stuff. I get your emails. I'm always like, wow, that's amazing. This stuff actually works.
Yeah.
But it's about basically changing the story. So when people see you, they see someone who's adding value in the investing space and not just what you did before, what you're doing on the side.
It is. It's tough because I also have my personal brand that I do the podcast through. So people get that confused. And I always tell people, have your separate social media, your channels, whatever. So when you're doing something personally, they know that it's, hey, it's Ryan Dement and these, there is podcast. And then there's Truvest, which is the real estate arm. And that's what they're doing. I messed up and in the beginning overlapped them and people got confused. And I got some great feedback from people and saying, hey, you got us confused, man. You're doing podcasts and you're doing real estate. Which one is it? And I said, it's both. So one guy said, are you asking me to invest in your personal brand or Truvest or both? And I'm like, that's a good question. I got to step back and go back to the drawing board. It's true. It's mistakes that we make along the way that we can learn from and be better. But when you don't heed those words of wisdom, that's where you get in trouble. And a lot of people don't listen, man. You just have to listen. And people will tell you what they're looking for.
Yeah, absolutely. People, I think you mentioned it. When you get feedback, that's how we grow. And I think sometimes what'll stop most of us is the analysis paralysis, that we don't take the action. You've obviously taken action. I've taken action. It took me 7 or 8 years of thinking about it to actually do it. And there's some life changes that happened. I was like, dude, like I'm not getting any younger. And I know I would regret if I didn't do this, right? So there's a saying that at the end of our lives, we'll regret more the things we didn't do rather than the things we did. And then as you go, you're going to learn all kinds of things. You're going to make all kinds of mistakes. There's a really great book out there by Robert Kiyosaki called Before You Quit Your Job. And because it's a cliche, my cousin said, you should read this before you quit your job. So I was like, oh, okay, I read it. And he describes as an employee, the employee mindset is you can't make any mistakes, right? If you make any mistakes, you make too many mistakes, you get fired. As an entrepreneur, you have to make a lot of mistakes. You got to be comfortable making a lot of mistakes and then quickly learn, right? So there's this learning process. He describes being an entrepreneur is like jumping out of an airplane, which if you do real estate or you do anything, like a lot of it's very entrepreneurial. It's like jumping out of an airplane without a parachute and trying to assemble one before you hit the ground. And in a way, there's a lot of truth to that, right? That you're going for it, you take the action. And as long as you keep taking action, you'll figure it out. But it takes a lot of work. There's a lot in the tank to get things moving. But once you do it, like I have no regrets. And I remember sitting right at this table. I was in a kind of a high pressure sales environment when I was working in the medical sales. I remember getting those calls the end of the month, the end of the quarter. And I just remember thinking about that. I had been doing the real estate full time for a couple of months. And what came out of my mouth was, thank God I'm not doing that job anymore. So I've been really glad, because I always thought, what's the worst that could happen? I was like, if it doesn't work out, I could always go back to medical sales, right? And so a lot of times we say, well, this is going to make me a failure. I can never, whatever. It's like, if you have some savings, could you try it and go for it? Or a lot of times you don't have to leave a job. You can do it on the side, but it just comes from really taking the action, finding mentors and going for it, I think.
Yeah, I'm a two-time tryer at entrepreneurship. So this is my third run, and corporate America never taught me how to be a fisherman. It kept me, right, my belly fat and happy. I got a bonus at the end of the year. There was no concern in the things that I learned from my first two failures. If you asked me then, I probably would have said, oh yeah, whatever. I'm tired of this crap, but they were huge and it molded me into what I wanted to be and then reset to today. We've got an affordable housing real estate development corporation, a nonprofit. We buy defaulted mortgages in the secondary and tertiary market. Got podcasts. Things are starting to what I wanted to do from the beginning, but it took two failures and $100,000 in debt to get me where I need to be. And I'm not saying everybody needs to go my route, but that's just my story. I mean, it was painful, but there's a lot of great learning experiences in there that I wouldn't change. But back then, I was angry at myself because I didn't know them. And it just took a lot of growing up to do just to get through all that.
Yeah, absolutely. No, it's a process of learning, and you have to let go. I think if you want to do something different, you got to let go of it having to be perfect and having to know the plan. So you figure it out on the way and you shift and you change. But not everybody has the mindset for it. So I think, and that's okay. And I think it's helpful to learn who you want, you know, who you are and who you want to be and what works for you and what doesn't. So I think that's all valuable information.
So you're on this journey, you're 4 years doing your side hustle, you raised 100,000, then you raised 1 million. Now you're saying you're up to 13 million?
We've raised 30 million. So 30 million. It's been all 13 right. million this year. Yeah. So in 2022, or the last 12 months, I should say.
So with the capital raise, why don't we start working into how that has grown over time? So you did the first deal where you brought two parties together, then you raised 1 million. Were you in on that deal as a general partner at that point?
Yeah. So I basically was able to get in as a general partner. My goal was to bring $500,000 or $1 million, or you try to bring more money. I just was new and I wasn't able to. So they still allowed me to be a general partner. And there's a lot of benefit that comes when you go from doing these bigger deals and you're just somebody who's talking about it to somebody who's actually now a general partner in a deal. So a lot of doors started to open up after that. And people see you differently in the industry, out of the industry. And now you have some experience in the industry doing deals, which is great.
So that first deal, walk us through that, what that looked like and what transpired out of it.
Yeah. So this was a deal in Amarillo, Texas. So a smaller market, but it was a value add multifamily deal. It was 225 units. The raise was only, we only had to raise about 3 million. Again, in the beginning, when you've never raised any money, that could have been like 100 million. It just feels,
yeah.
But yeah, I just, like I said, I had a bunch of calls with friends and family and trying to raise on the deal. The kind of the benefits of the deal, we saw some opportunity to come in and do some renovations, which is pretty common. We'll see a lot of owners that their rents are below market because they haven't really done renovations and they've had these properties on us for years and they're ready to sell them because for whatever reason. And so we had this property the goal was to hold it 5 years. We had it 2.5 years and we ended up getting about a 26% average annual return to investors. So we did very well. I think we projected about a 15% return per year and we ended up with a 26% return per year. And it's great. So it was a home run. It was a win for us. And we had a range of performance, but that's one that we're excited about. So yeah. And then when that one ended, we find another one to go do another one. And there's a lot of the deals, like I mentioned, we'll have typically project a 5-year hold. And then we'll end up selling a lot of times between years 2 and 3, just because you've got so much appreciation. You only need a 20% appreciation a lot of times if you put 20% down to double your investment, right? So you don't need a lot of appreciation. And so a lot of you start getting some appreciation and then it's okay if it makes sense to sell. Everything's for sale at the right price. We actually had one that we sold. This is back in Jacksonville. We have about 1,500 multifamily units in Jacksonville. We bought this one in March of 21 and we planned to hold it 6 years. We ended up selling it 10 months later. We bought it for 27. We sold it for 37 million. So it was about a 90% IRR to investors. And then we were able to exchange that, do a 1031 tax exempt exchange to roll that into another property. So it was just a total home run. So those happen. And then we have other ones that are more kind of base hits and we love them all. So we're just trying to continue to do things, help add value to our investors.
So if somebody wants to get into it and they're all excited about the numbers you're sharing, where is some starting points for individuals? Maybe let's talk about two types of people. One would be an individual like yourself starting out, you don't have a lot of capital. And then two, that busy professional that does have capital that wants to park it and be able to have some passive income out of it.
Yeah. So a couple of things, if you are somebody that, you know, you are looking to learn and you want to figure out how do I do this, or is it possible that I could raise money or I could find deals? You know, those are kind of the two ways people get into these deals. Either they find a deal or they can try to raise money. I think for everybody going to local meetups, there's a bunch in Southern California where I live. There are most cities have, if you go on meetup.com or you search online, you can find a real estate meetup and you'll meet very interesting people, right? You'll meet people that are doing all kinds of interesting things in the real estate space. And there's also some great national events that talk about real estate syndication or multifamily syndication. And it's just great because what happens is it gets you, the first person you really need to sell on something is yourself, right? So if you can't sell yourself on it, that, hey, this is something I could do. This is how I could do this. And so once you start hearing the stories and you meet someone that, oh, hey, I actually quit my job, or it's not just on some podcast, or it's, this is actually a real thing, or somebody in my neighborhood or my area, or somebody I know actually did this, then it's, why couldn't I do that? So that becomes real. So that's the biggest thing, is the networking and the education. So going to conferences, going to local meetups, that's a great place to start for either somebody who, you know, is looking to do it themselves, or somebody who's passively investing. First, passive investor, those are great shows. I have a podcast called The Mailbox Money Show. And that's where we talk about all things passive investing, different asset classes. This ebook that I wrote that's called How to Use Inflation to Your Advantage. So it's basically an ebook, about 50 pages. Talks about some of the challenges with inflation, how to take inflation and make it your friend, and also how to get involved in passive investing and things like multifamily real estate or other asset classes that are out there, and really how to analyze them, right? Because I think the biggest investment we really make is in our own education. The conferences help, the books help, the podcasts like this help. Everything helps to help get you to a place that's a much better place, that you actually feel like, oh, I actually can do this. And now you're doing things like, people are like, how did you do that? It's like, just learned about it. Just figured it out. Just like you did.
Yeah. I like that book. Can you put your book back up really quick?
Yeah. It's called How to Use Inflation to Your Advantage. This is a free download at my website, bronsonequity.com.
Cool. I like that. That's a good spin. Out of the book, what could we take? What could be three things you could share with us without giving away the secret sauce or whatever so we actually can use inflation to our benefit, because it's killing us right now.
Yeah. So I'll just touch on that part of it. So yeah, inflation right now, obviously we're feeling it at the pump. We're feeling it with costs going up, with rent going up, with the value of goods and services. Everything's going up, and there's reasons for that. They printed all this money. There's a 40%, over 40% creation of new money, either digitally or physically, over a two-year period between February of 2020 and February of 2022. So they just like printed and created so much money. There's no mechanism to put it back, right? So the money's got to go somewhere. So how do we, and so I just see inflation being here for the foreseeable future. And so how do we get on the other side of the equation? So we're not being hurt by it, but where it's actually helping us. And I gave one example about real estate, right? If I have a house that costs $100,000 and I put 20% down, which would be $20,000, and the house has a 20% appreciation that goes up to $120,000, I haven't increased my equity by 20%, I'm increasing it by 100%, right? So if you can get into long-term fixed debt, now I still think some people are really cautious on real estate, but there could be real estate deals that make sense. When you buy a property, the buying price is fixed, but the interest rate potentially can be adjusted later. The Fed typically raises rates for a period of time. It's usually 5 to 12 months, where we're in the middle of that period. So I think potentially in the next 3 to 6 months, they could reverse course, and then there could be a chance where you can either refinance or valuations can go up. Single family is a little tricky. That's why I love multifamily, because if people can't afford to buy or can't qualify for single family houses, where do they go? They've got to go into multifamily apartments. So that's why I think rents are going to see a decline. One way is through multifamily housing. You're able to buy great apartment deals that are really based on how much income is coming in, not on a comp based on how much this property across the street, across town sold for. It's more based on how much income you're producing in that particular property. So that gives us opportunity to add value. And I can get into details on that. But in the book, it talks about some of the strategies, some of the different asset classes that are beyond multifamily. But I just think multifamily is a great place for people to start, because it's very understandable. And it works great in a time of recession. It works great in a time of inflation. And the rents generally keep pace very well with inflation.
How do you add value? That's just the first question I would ask.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah. So I have some different views on this than a lot of people. A lot of people like class A brand new apartments.
Of course.
This is what reads by. Yeah, no repairs. That sounds awesome. Yeah. But brand new things. The returns are really pretty low to start with. This is what REITs and institutional groups buy. But what happens when there's a recession? I live in Pasadena, California. There's a two-bedroom luxury apartment going $4,200 a month. What happens if there's a recession. They're not going to get $4,200 a month. They might get $3,500 or $3,000, and that dramatically hurts. So basically, you own the real estate market, right? You just go up. It's like you don't really have an edge. You're just buying things as they go up. Hopefully, they stay up. They come down. Oh, it's the real estate market. There's a way, though, that you can put in here. I'm a big student of Warren Buffett. He talks about having a margin of safety in your investments. So what does that look like in a real estate deal? In a multifamily deal, it's called adding value. It's called buying something that you can renovate. Just, it's very similar to the concept of doing a flip, right? You buy a house, it's a dump, and you fix it up, you sell it for later. Well, we don't really buy it just to sell it in a short period. We'll hold it for 5 years. But like, for here's one example. In Jacksonville, we've got a deal that rents are $1,000 a month. If we put in $6,000 per unit, we do those renovations, we can see rents now at over $1,500 a month. So that's an over 50% upside in the rents. And again, like I said, what we're going for is not just, it's not properties. If this house I'm in right now sells, it depends on what the house across the street or across town sold for. Again, it's all about income. These properties are all value based on the income. So we know if we can increase the value, we come in and we renovate 80% of these 300 units on this particular property, then what does that actually mean? Well, that means that the value is going to go up by close to 50% just based on what we're seeing right now in the market. That's not even any speculation. It's called forced appreciation, right? We see those rents right now in the market in those renovated units. All we've got to do is do those renovations. And then over time, as people move in at the higher rents, it increases the value. So that's where I feel like it puts much more of a margin of safety that even if interest rates keep going up, even if valuations go down, even if all kinds of stuff happens, as long as we're able to achieve and do those renovations and see the new rent increases, we're going to just find another deal. So that's, I think, a way you can get more safety in a deal. And it also gives a much higher return. Instead of a 7 or 8% return per year, we like to project around a 14 to 16% return per year, which is awesome. People that are in the stock market are like, oh my gosh, how can you do that? It's much more predictable. We don't have the ups and downs that you have in the stock market or even in single family. So I think there's some opportunity there.
That's cool. I like that. It brings me to, we do notes. So we'll buy defaulted mortgages. We also originate notes, and those are on single family. And it's the same thing. You come in, you have your margin up front, but you're also able to buy down the discount. So you have that margin. So when you do sell it on the other side, you have that built in already. So it's similar, just a little different, but I like both. We're not in multifamily. I've talked about multifamily with my partners. We just haven't got there yet. We've got enough on our plate, but I like how you take that approach and be able to bring value, because ultimately you go and buy a B or C property that needs help and you guys can come in, renovate, get those apartments up to speed. Next thing you know, you're bringing in that additional cash flow, but ROI, that's huge, because ultimately if they can't buy a house, they're coming to you. Yeah. And most people right now are priced out of the market. One and two, interest rates are out of control. Where else do you go? You have to go to an apartment. You got to go rent something. And here in Phoenix, like you were talking about, the hedge funds and in the larger institutional buyers in the neighborhood I live in, there's probably 25 or 30 rentals that are owned by either Blackstone, Pathway, or I forget the other one that's out there. It's green and white logo, but I can't remember the name of it. And they're all underwater. They bought them at the top of the market. They're trying to rent them right now at $2,700 to $3,200. They can't rent them. So now they're flooding the market here. They're taking the rentals and turning them in for sale. And they still have them at the top of the market. And now one that's seven doors down from, he's been on the market for 6 months. They bought it at $580. It's now down to $420,000.
Wow.
Yeah. $160,000 in the hole. And they still can't sell it at that price.
Yeah.
So I get where you're coming from. I totally do. So I like what we're talking about with multifamily guys. It's a way to hedge against a lot of issues, but also you have to know the game. You have to learn and put the time and effort in. And this conversation today should be invaluable to you if you're trying to beat inflation, but also do something different other than just a normal 9 to 5. If you're wanting a side hustle or turn it into a full-time job, take note. This is good information. I'm sorry, I digress there. But anyhow, with that property, the value that you guys bring, how is it structured? And I know we're going to get in the nuts and bolts a little bit, but up front, let's say I'm a passive investor. I have $100,000 to invest in a multifamily deal with you. How does that work for me as a passive investor?
Yeah. So as a passive investor, really your job is to vet the team and vet the deal itself. I talk about three areas to analyze. One is the market. Is it a growing market? Is there a growing population? Is there population growth, job growth, income growth? If you're buying in the right market. And then the second thing really is the right operating team. Have they done this before? What are the experience? of what's the experience of a team? And then also the last thing is really, what does the deal look like? Does it make sense? Do you see how you can make money? Do you feel like you understand what is the primary risk of that deal? And so those are things that as a passive investor, the more deals you look at, and you don't have to look at 100 deals, you may look at 5 deals or 6, just try to see, get a sense of what it is. And then when people choose to invest or start and they've never done it, it can feel very much like a foreign concept. Like, this is something like I've heard about, but do people even do that? I mean, is this a scam? Just, I mean, there are a lot of things that came up for me when I first started. But really, what for a lot of people, it's, I think of a call I had with a physician who was worth $5 million and he had only ever done stocks and bonds, right? So he, for him, that conversation was just much more basic about understanding how syndication works versus somebody who had invested in 10 or 20 syndications and they're asking about cap rate reversions and your rent growth assumptions. And it's a different type of conversation. So it depends. For a lot of people that are new, it's more just about trying to understand how it works, what could happen, what goes wrong, what could go wrong. And in every deal, something will go wrong. But it's just like when you do a flip or you buy a house, like nothing ever goes exactly according to plan. But you want to get the sense of when you're looking at a deal, someone is very conservative. They're not looking at a best case scenario. They're looking at, we're modest on our projections here. And we've already actually, there's these 3 positives in the deal that we didn't really put in the numbers, but we feel like these are pretty likely as well. We were very conservative here. We feel like it's going to do really well. And that's some common things of great operators, is they don't try to make the numbers look really good. They actually try to make the numbers look worse so that when people get in, they're able to outperform on those. So that's an approach that we take. But for people that do invest, how it's structured is we start an LLC or a limited liability corporation in the name of this new property. And we basically raise money, whether it's a recent deal we had, we raised $12 or $13 million for. And so we just raised $75,000, $100,000 from some one person here and there. We also do 1031 exchanges. So meaning if somebody has a house that they have over $500,000 in equity, we will allow them to roll that into a syndication. Now, there's a little work to do it. It's a little bit of cost to do it, but it's awesome because then somebody can take those gains. They don't have to pay. They can defer the taxes on it. And we've had people have some real success doing that. So those are a couple things. And then as people get started, it's just, I think, some questions to ask, or what does the reporting look like? How often do you guys report? What's the reputation of the sponsor in the industry? That's why it's helpful to know some people in the industry. And I think as a passive investor, one of the most transformational friendships or relationships you can have is with somebody who is a full-time passive investor. That's all they do. Or maybe they have a business, but they've just been investing for years, because they'll be able to share information that's just, hey, I invested with these guys, it worked well. I would never invest with these people for this reason. And they don't really have anything to sell you. Like our group, we're a syndicating group. Basically, I'd love to have every of your listener do a deal with us just because I feel like we're doing a great job. But I have something that I'm sharing versus somebody who's a passive investor. They're not really pitching anything, or they're just simply trying to have the same goals that you are. So I think that's when you go to meetups, you'll meet a lot of great sponsors, a lot of great people. But if you can find people that are experienced passive investors, then it can really go from just an idea to like, here's something that I actually can do that will be really valuable for the long term, which is great.
Are you raising capital through accredited and non-accredited investors, or only accredited?
Yeah, so we do accredited and non-accredited. We have some deals that are for accredited only, which just means high net worth or people that, you know, have a certain level of income. And then we have some that are for everybody, just as long as people have a minimum net worth. And it's just really trying to make sure that it makes sense for them.
And then are you using a 506? Sorry. Are you using a, oh my gosh, I'm drawing a blank. A 506B or B, yeah, or C to actually raise through your accredited investors?
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, for those that aren't aware, 506B is for accredited, non-accredited with a relationship. So we do those, where it's basically we have an investment club. So we have everybody who goes to our website that's interested in joining, basically join our investment club. We set up a brief call to learn about them and see if our goals are aligned. And then we have the 506C, which is for accredited only. It just has to be verified that somebody actually is an accredited investor. And then we can take funds from them. So we've got some of both. We've got some deals that are for accredited only and some that are only for non-accredited as well. So it varies.
What would you say is the best mixture of passive investors? Do you like accredited versus non-accredited, or a combination of both?
I think in general, accredited investors have more money and there's a little less regulation. The way it's perceived is just that accredited investors have a higher level of sophistication. They have more resources, more money. And they have more ability to withstand risk, and they typically are higher net worth. So the average call that I had over 1,300 calls is typically a $2 to $5 million net worth, right? So people are typically more wealthy, right? So they have a higher net worth. Somebody who is not accredited, you just have to make sure they understand. I guess sometimes I get a call where somebody doesn't have a high net worth and they're looking to double their money in 12 months. And I say, that's just really not what we do. We're looking at kind of base hits. And once in a while we get, like I mentioned, one deals with a home run, but you just want to make sure the goals of the investor are lined up with yours. There were one time I had a guy who was like a PhD in real estate investing or something, but he had a negative net worth, right? He had a lot of student loans. He had no money. He was going to borrow 50 or 100K to invest in a deal. And I said, no, that isn't time, LA. It's not going to work. I don't want you to borrow money. Like, this is for, it could take 5 years before you really start receiving, you know, cash flow on this, or if we get your money back. Hopefully it's 6 to 12 months, but you want to just make sure that you don't get in a place where you're putting people in a pinch. And the deals we have that are 506B, where we can raise from both accredited and unaccredited, we typically raise more money. We raise usually around 50% more money, just because people, and some people have a high net worth, but, or a decent net worth, but a lot of it's in their house. So they don't have a lot of it on the side. And we'll get a bunch of people that are interested in investing. It depends on the deal. It really depends on what kind of deal we have.
So between accredited and non-accredited, is there a entry point for investment? Is there a minimum amount that you would actually work with?
So we typically do 75K as our minimum. So if somebody, just as a general rule, there's no specific rule from the SEC. The whole thing is about creating a suitable investment for people. So again, if somebody has 70, let's say I've got 100K and they want to put 75K in your deal, that doesn't really, they may not make a lot of sense, because what's going to happen in the next 5 years, the next couple of years, what happens if the deal doesn't form right and all of a sudden they need that money? So that's the downside of a lot of syndicated deals, is that if people need liquidity or they need to sell right away, that may not be possible, or it may have to be sold at a deep discount. Really having the right investment for the right investor. So we typically, as a general rule, usually around 300K. If somebody's going to put 75K in, generally, it depends on their situation, but depends how much liquid they have. If that's all they have liquid, what happens if they have a health need, or they've got something that comes up, or they lose their job, or just things like that. You got to think that through. And then there are special situations where somebody will put in more. It's like a big amount in retirement where they don't have a high net worth, but they've got a lot in a retirement account. So there's special situations that come up. And I think it's just really having conversations and taking notes around all that, that if something does come up, at least you've addressed it, right? So it's not like it's just a surprise. Oh my gosh, I had no idea that when I invested, this is liquid. I had no idea. It's like, no, we talked about it. I have notes, Mr. Schmidt. And then we'll try to help people out if we can. But again, the best part where, you know, a lot of times you need to say no to people just because it's not really sorry. You just save up a little longer and maybe you can invest in the future.
And then as a passive investor, I shouldn't expect any type of cash flow till year five, is what you're saying?
So as a passive investor, what we tell people, at least in most of our deals, every deal is different, but typically we say distributions usually start around 6 to 12 months. Now, we've had some that we've said that to, and it starts at 3 months after closing. They start right away almost. And then some that take longer than a year. And it just depends on the deal. Some, there's a variety of different ways that I can look, and every deal is different. And it's not, if I could predict that and tell you exactly which deals are performed great or not, then I'd be able to just only do the deals that produce ridiculous cash flow. And they say, oh my gosh, you're a genius. But in general, we performed or outperformed our projections so far on every deal that I've done, which is awesome, right? So I've been really happy about that. In general, it's hard to calculate because you have so many variables, right? You don't know if you're going to renovate the units as quickly as you'd like. You don't know what's going to happen in the market. Is it going to continue to appreciate as far as rent growth? It just, there's a lot of unknowns that you can't figure out ahead of time. But that's where the having reserves, extra reserves, having a margin of safety that you're just really trying to be conservative on the way you approach things is really important.
That's good, because I know there's, in the single family residence space, everybody wants cash flow like the next month. And I'm like, are you kidding me? You just funded a deal. We have to get the house built or renovated. It's going to take 90 to 120 days. And then we got to put somebody in it. So you've got it. The expectations, and it's amazing how many conversations you can have about that. Document it, email it. It's in the contract. It's in the agreement. It's in the investment agreement. And they still think it's supposed to happen the next month. It's crazy.
Yeah.
I digress. Sorry.
No, it's true.
We're getting close on time here. I want to be able to connect everybody to you that wants to be a passive investor, or maybe they want to be a syndicator or anything to that extent. How can they get a hold of you?
Yeah. So the best way to reach out is, like I mentioned, my website at bronsonequity.com. We've got that free guide there. You can connect with them also on social media, on mostly Facebook and LinkedIn. And then I go to a lot of events. I speak at a lot of events. We have a YouTube channel. I just love really educating folks on investing, on how to get started, how to start putting money passively into deals, how to get out of Wall Street, and then really looking at what's happening in the kind of the markets as well, the Federal Reserve, and just how do we really protect ourselves from just inflation and other sorts of things that can go out and steal the hard-earned money that we have. But yeah, I love connecting with folks. This has been great. I really appreciate you having me on. This has been a lot of fun, Ryan.
Not a problem, sir. I will put a link to your website and let people go from there. But thank you for educating us on multifamily syndication. It's I love learning about it. So sorry that I asked so many questions, but I could ask a billion more. But I love real estate, and being able to share different ways for people to prosper with it is just ideal for me.
Yeah, no, it's great, man. I love having these conversations. So it was a great time. Really enjoyed it.
Cool. Thank you for coming on. Love the conversation. Love the information you shared, and we'll be talking.
Sounds great. Right. Thanks, Ryan.
Have a good one.
You too.